The following presentation is from North Pine Baptist Church. We trust that it will help you learn more about God and His message for the world. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.
Okay, can everyone hear me okay? Excellent, okay. Well, look, thank you very much for coming tonight. Like I said, my name's Alex James. Just a bit of a background to myself. So I've had over 7 years of counselling experience working with over 200 couples. I specialised in my training in Gottman marriage therapy and emotion-focused couples therapy. So growing up and sort of working in the roles that I have, I just have a passion for working with couples. I'm used to sitting in a room with like two people and myself, so there's a few more than two right now. I'm definitely going to try to do my best. I've also done a lot of pre-marriage couples as well, so I'll be sort of referring to a little bit of that tonight. I've been married to Lorinda for 6 years with our two little girls, which I just finished with some toilet training, so... Yeah. So my knees have been covered in urine a lot today, and they're not right now. So I'm in a good space for this talk. Great. So this is where I want us to think a little bit about. These are the three main topics to take away today. The sound relationship house works. Okay, and we're going to get back to that as a topic. As a framework for understanding healthy relationships, it's only made stronger with God's design of self-sacrificial love towards one another. And everyone has a chance to do a little bit of work on their house. Okay? So, a couple of things to start with. I wanted to do a couple of disclaimers. So when we're talking about healthy relationships, we are specifically thinking abusive practices have no place in relationships. Some people use the language of family and domestic violence. And so I just wanted to highlight specifically here that this, when we're thinking around couples and healthy relationships and the sound relationship house, there isn't a place for this in that space. So if someone is in that situation or that discussion can come up, definitely there's specialist support services and care available as well. The second disclaimer, and I couldn't find any pictures of the elders, but I've got those two people that you should know. Speaking personally, I would always recommend seeking pastoral advice about my marriage or a relationship before seeking relationship counselling. I think there's such a breadth of possibility with our church and our supports, and I always think and always value that opportunity. I know when I work with clients, when they've got faith communities, again, engaging with those are really useful. I have a lot of trust as well, knowing that if those pastoral care needs can't be met in that team is going to be able to support you with other referrals or other options. So I just want to consider those two disclaimers today. Great. This is our big house. And what I want to show you is with this model, this is the full model. We've got seven sort of steps, seven levels. Now, it looks nice in terms of its colours and setup. You don't have to go from the bottom level to the top level, okay? So when you're thinking around the sound relationship house, you are jumping in between those levels. Now, any good house has good foundations. We've got trust and commitment, and that's what's going to be holding up the possibility for this work. Now, the purpose of showing or talking about a framework is only possible or only useful because repair is possible. So when there's difficulty in a relationship, repair is that opportunity to grow. And so that's why we'll be incorporating that tonight. Just a point on counselling. Generally, couples counselling is experiential. So it's less about someone being a wise sage on a mountain providing wisdom. And it's more about having experiential opportunities where you are strengthening, you're building either insight, motivation or knowledge, but you're doing so in a environment and a conducted way. So tonight's not couples counselling for everyone present and listening, but tonight is thinking a little bit about a healthy framework. Generally, I find too that in practice, about 40% of couples who present for couples counselling are looking for that one final shot. It's the last chance, it's the last stage for them. Lastly, before we hop in too much further, I've got an example of Jack and Jill. I don't know why I've used those two terms. I'm going to come back to that phrase. Because I think of the beanstalk, but anyway, it's Jack and Jill. So this is going to be a case scenario. So when we're working tonight, I'm going to be stepping through each of those levels in the sound relationship house. We're going to come back to Jack and Jill and just think a little bit about this case a bit more. I've got some general information up there. They've been married for 10 years. Jack works as an IT specialist, works from home. Jill looks after her youngest who just started kindy. Both go to a local church, have supportive families, and are doing really well. The issues raised, Jack seems to have so many hobbies, fishing, sailing, camping, computer games, and he wants to buy that drum kit, but he didn't buy all those gel blasters to play with his casual soccer team, and he doesn't use that. Jill spends time putting together scrapbooks and taking pictures. She particularly enjoys puzzles and has been collecting as many board games as she can fit in the cupboard. At home, she's always talking to her friends via Facebook Messenger or phone, and she's always got her headphones in. So they're presenting issues I just want you to consider for a second. Jill feels that Jack never spends enough time with her and spends too much time on his phone. Actually, Jill feels Jack is pretty hopeless at home. Jack feels that Jill is always critical of the things that he loves. He wishes she would get off his back. And so that might be a relationship. That might be where people are sitting, okay? And we're going to come back to that and just to consider what are those opportunities for repair? You know, what's the sound relationship house doing in this relationship? Jumping back here, trust and commitment. As we mentioned, there's five ways to build trust. Making trustworthiness a main priority in the relationship, so just being honest. Acting to maximize your partner's well-being. Knowing that trust is built in small positive moments, so not generic promises. Avoiding the negative comparisons. And generating frequent thoughts and acts that cherish your partner's positive qualities and minimize your focus on their negative qualities. Tonight, there's the sound relationship house, which is seven levels. We can better distill that down into those three circles, and I kind of wave my hands around a bit here. Friendship and admiration, shared meaning and management of conflict. Okay, so they're the three summaries we're going to get to. Great. All right, so number one is building love maps. And so this is right at the base of the sound relationship house. Love maps is the understanding of your partner's inner psychological world. Couples that spend time strengthening and updating their love maps, they remember the major events in each other's lives. They keep updating this information as the facts and feelings of their partner's world changes. So this is the value of you knowing your partner more and more, and knowing them deeply. Up the top there, it's a little bit not as clear, but some of these questions you could consider. Thinking of your partner, what are they most sad about? What's one of their worries or their concerns? What medical problems do they worry about? What was their most embarrassing moment? What was their worst childhood experience? The more and more that you can map out and know about someone, the more that you can connect with genuine friendship. This is in that phase of friendship and adoration. You can imagine someone who's just traveling together and you can say, man, that would have been really tough for you, seeing all those people in that environment. That would have been really tough. Hey, you were really good to get through that. That type of encouragement wouldn't happen if I don't know much about my partner. That's where love maps can come into play. One of the resources we're going to talk about is the Gottman Card Dex. It's an app that you can install free, and it just has this kind of activity. One of the resources that I'll make available is actually a love maps activity. The second is sharing fondness and admiration. Sometimes I say adoration, so I'm going to sort of stick with that one. Fondness is affection, okay, for one another, to share it and to make it more mature. It's not enough to say I'm fond of you. It's to add that rich or that other dialogue, that language. I'm proud of you. I'm attracted to you. I'm impressed by you is nice. We grow it further by saying I'm proud of the way you X. I'm attracted to your this. I'm impressed by the way that you handled that. I like how you do things at home. Sharing fondness and admiration is intentional. It's consistent. And it's a faithful way. And it's the antidote to contempt. Okay, that's going to be a term that we're going to come back to a little bit later. It increases the amount of affection and respect in a relationship. Turning towards instead of turning away. And so we're still working through our levels of the SAND relationship house. We're starting to get a little bit closer to how we manage conflict. But just consider that as a couple, how often am I turning towards my partner rather than turning away? Couples that stay married were much better at one thing, the turn towards instead of away. So in an example, a six-year follow-up, couples that stayed married turned towards one another 86% of the time. Couples that divorced averaged only 33% of the time. Now, I haven't done a history of Gottman marriage therapy or anything like that, but just know that the basis of that therapy started with a mathematician and his wife, and basically a whole series of these labs where couples came and they spent a weekend, they spent a week, and a team of hundreds of social scientists coded every single interaction these couples had, which is an interesting experience. Now, it happened at a time where there were more family values in relationships, so more of a traditional view of a relationship, which I think for our context is appropriate. And that's what they were finding, these turn towards. This list here, I think, is talking about bids, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, but the turn towards is I'm interested in you, I'm open to a conversation. I'm frustrated, but you've just said something interesting. I can hold that frustration. I'm actually going to turn towards you and connect with you. Turning away goes, I'm frustrated. And you know what? Stuff you. I'm done. See you later. And so I don't want to, diminish those feelings that might be for someone. They're frustrated. They're upset. But the turn towards means I'm always open to you as a partner. I'm always open to hearing your thoughts and feelings. The bids, they're the request for partner's attention, interest, engagement. They mirror someone's affect and they show support. Some of the bids could be silent. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you've had the help me eyes from your partner or someone important to you. They've gone, help me, get me out of this situation. That could be a silent bid. The comment, the questions, the playful bids, and the negative bids. So a bid is that invitation. If you think of children and they've gone down to our kids' zone, they've come back with those little paintings and it's full of glitter and there's something and there's a moving and they just want to show you. They're just so excited to show you. The second they show you, they go off and play. But that initial moment, they want you to adore in them, okay? In attachment theory, you're thinking of very normal, natural, healthy things. I want to be adored, loved, supported, trusted. And those things we have as well as adults. So just as the child's going, look at my beautiful painting, in a partnership, you're doing the same thing. And that's healthy. You're saying, oh, wow, look at that color of that car Like, what was that? Look at that. And you are trying to show and share in a moment. Your relationship doesn't stand on the color of the car, but you're trying to show connection. You're trying to say, it could be playful. It could be a playful bid. Man, you're so cheeky all the time, you know, and you might sort of throw something towards your partner in a sort of a playful way. Now, they could just ignore that and just get on with what they're doing, or they might catch it. They might get into a little bit of playful banter. And that is you turning towards your partner. You're answering these bids. Now, the warnings for turning away, I know this sort of graph is a bit generic in terms of a staircase, but and they call it a marital cascade. But simply put, if my kids come out from our wonderful kids zone 30 times to show me something that they've made and I don't care about it, I don't show them any connection, I don't show them excitement, at some point they're going to stop coming towards me. And this is what we see in adult relationships, our intimate partner relationships. At some point I'm going to stop pointing out the cool color of those cars or the fact that this book was really interesting or that I finally heard from my sister that I matter. I'm going to stop sharing those sort of things because I don't hear from you. I don't get the connection. You're not turning towards me, you're turning away. The turning away responses can cause contempt, belligerence, domineering, criticism, defensiveness. Contempt's probably the one that we're going to get to in just a moment. Now, this fourth step is kind of underlying. The positive perspective talks about an emotional bank account. So you've talked about the positive bids. We talked about turning towards your partner. The positive perspective, I guess, gives you the context to why you're interested in doing some of these things. The emotional bank account, couples in a stable, happy relationship have a ratio of positive to negative interactions of 5 to 1. Even in the midst of conflict, it's still 5 to 1, okay? These are the strong relationships where you're moving forward. He uses banking terms here and he uses nickels and dimes and I don't fully understand those, but keeping your emotional bank account in the black, basically every time that you're making a withdrawal of a bank account, if you want to use it in that analogy, if me at the dinner table every night is a criticism to the person that's produced the meal, I'm withdrawing from the emotional bank account, okay, in a negative way. Wow, is this a new type of tomato sauce? This tastes gross. Wow, did no one buy any aioli? You know, no one cares about the way that they put my schnitzel together. Did you buy the good ones or did you buy those cheap ones? Those are negative interactions. And the more you do those, your balance is going to be overdrawn. The theory is that small, intentional, consistent efforts over time will profoundly change the trajectory of relationships. In my example there of like some kitchen dinner table banter from someone that's probably a bit cross, if those disappeared, that's actually going to really start changing the dynamic of that relationship. Small is easy. It's affirming nod, a quick shoulder rub, a well-timed question. Intentional and consistent things. Start crafting your plan today is kind of the call to action with that one. All right. The fifth part is managing conflict. And so if you've been sort of tracking a little bit, we've got 7 levels in the house. 4 of the levels are in that friendship and adoration space. Because it's hard for me to manage my conflict or to try to be good at communicating or try not to criticize my partner. It's hard for me to do that if I'm not their friend or if I don't feel that they're friendly. If there isn't the turning towards, if I don't have a positive perspective. So this is where the framework's starting to connect together. Managing conflict. And this is where we're looking at repair. So 69% of conflict is a perpetual issue. The terminology we sometimes use is gridlock. So that idea you're thinking, putting your hands together, that gridlock in traffic, like no amount of you wishing, of you being really close to the person in front of you, you trying to get a different route, nothing's going to change. You're just stuck there. That's gridlock. 69% of issues are perpetual issues in a relationship. Hey, the way that we manage the finances is always leaves us short. Look, we have different styles of parenting. It always upsets me when this happens. Some of those issues are going to be perpetual. They'll always be there in the relationship. The research on this is quite significant. There's spaces in your relationship where you need to start to compromise. You need to start to move. And that's where the language of managing conflict is coming from. It's not the absence of conflict. In a healthy relationship under this framework, there is conflict. I'd hope so. You're different people. You have different thoughts and feelings and ideas. And so when I talk about repair, we need to think about a preemptive repair, an in-the-moment repair, and an aftermath repair. So if I'm having the positive perspective, I've got friendship, and I'm trying to work towards connecting with my partner, then I am more interested in trying to do repair work. We're in conflict. We've stuffed up. I've had a fight. I can storm off. I can be a bit sulky. I can disengage. But I just wonder, is there any part of me that's thinking of in-the-moment repair? Is there any part of me that's thinking aftermath repair? It's now a couple of days after that event. I'm sitting there going, man, I always seem to fight around the kids. I always seem to fight about this and this. I wonder if there's some value in doing a preemptive repair. Hey, I noticed the last couple of weeks we've had this topic come up over and over again. And before we get to a conclusion or a decision, I just want to say, I think we struggle to have this conversation. Do you agree? That's the preemptive repair. And when we observe conflict, this type of language comes up. The four horsemen, and we'll get to that in just a moment. It's not a biblical horseman. Startup, which is gentle and harsh. Repair, effective and ineffective. Accepting and rejecting influence. Compromise and gridlock. I'm just going to spend a moment here talking about accepting and rejecting influence. Influence in a relationship is a healthy sharing of ideas. Accepting influence in a relationship is stepping towards your partner. So that stepping towards might mean that you agree with their decision. What I'm saying here is their decision point isn't necessarily a locked-in answer. Their decision point is something like, I'd really like to try next time with your parents for us to focus on this. And you might go, well, actually, no, I think we should focus on something else. We should just not bring it up. Now, you could manage that conflict and try to talk and figure out what the best route is. Or sometimes, and when appropriate, you accept influence. You go, I don't think that'll work. Well, this stuff's up, it's your fault. You go, let's give that a try. Yeah, let's give that a go. That's gonna be the way we're gonna go. That's accepting influence. And with the research that I mentioned, that was quite a powerful indicator. Couples that were more commonly accepting influence were actually managing their conflict really, really well. Hey, I think we watch too much TV. Oh, I don't think we watch too much TV. Accepting influence could be, yeah, well, why don't we drop down a little bit? Now, I might personally think that it's fine at the level it is, but let's find out. I'm going to be curious. I'm going to accept your influence. And what that tells that person is that their thoughts matter. Their wants around the relationship are valid and that you've accepted that, you've supported that. Now, has anyone heard of the Four Horsemen before? Is that a term? A couple people? Yep. So the Four Horsemen, I guess this terminology of criticism, defensiveness, contempt and stonewalling can have a massive impact on relationships. Remember, criticism is not feedback. Criticism is what I was sort of joking a bit about before with the tomato sauce and the garlic aioli. Criticism is intentional and it can cause pain. You just never do this right. Look, the way that you open the door, the way that you deal with the kids, the way that you never take out the rubbish, it's just awful. I hate the way that you go about things. What we want to talk about with those antidotes, I'll get there in a moment, but I'll just touch on these ones as well. Defensiveness is obviously just that stepping back. Now, remember, we just talked about turning towards. So I just literally stood back on the stage just then because that's what the defensiveness is. No way. It's not my fault. No. I told you if we go this way, we'll get stuck in traffic. No, I told you we'd be lost. That defensiveness, again, you're not open, you're not curious, you're not ready to accept influence, you're not answering any of those emotional bids, you're being defensive, you're covering your backside. Yeah, you were wrong. Now, how dare you bring this up? I've had a really rough day today. That's the defensiveness. It's not an opportunity for conversation, it's just you defending. And I don't know about you, but if I felt that someone was throwing things at me, I might put up a bit of a shield. I might try to defend myself. And then once they've stopped attacking me, well, then maybe it's my turn to attack them. And then we get into what's called a negative cycle of communication. So that comes from emotion-focused couples therapy, this principle of attack, defend. So someone will just say something out of the blue and then I'll feel it's an attack. So I'm going to step back. I'm going to defend myself, and then we get stuck into this loop because after I'm defending myself, I'll throw some criticism back. Hey, how dare you do that today? Of all days, you should have bloody known. And then suddenly that person is feeling defensive, and so you just get stuck into that loop. Stonewalling is that space where you're just completely, well, you know, the terminology, you're building up a wall. Hey, we're not talking about this right now. No, it never gets well when we talk about this, I'm out. No, I can't right now. I can't talk about that issue right now, I've got to go. That's stonewalling. You're not even providing an opportunity for the discussion. What I'd love to draw your attention to, I guess, is contempt. Contempt is the space that's most dangerous in a relationship. Gottman Marriage Therapy would talk about contempt being the leading indicator of divorce and separation in marriages. Contempt is where you just take it that step further. This is where you're criticizing their personality, their being. So if I'm not very good at parking, that's a criticism. You know, Alex is not good at parking. And I'll tell you that's true. I'm really good at parallel parking, but some left parks and some reverse parks, I'll just go around. I'll park a bit further away. That's fine. So that's a criticism. Contempt is when we say Alex is hopeless at parking. Alex doesn't care about this. He's never really cared about this. He's actually not good at driving either. It would just be way better if Lorinda drove all the time. That contempt just comes in there and causes a lot of pain. Also, when you've got contempt for someone, it's hard to sit in that space of turning towards them. It's hard to see them as your friend. It's hard to do repair work when you think they're not worth it. Contempt is where you really need to keep an eye out. Now, the antidotes are a way to feel heard and not hurt. The horsemen build distance in the relationship. Literally like a horse running off, your rich, beautiful relationship is being dragged out. The antidotes create connection. They create an opportunity for you to understand your partner more, and they bring possibilities for connection. So the criticism part the antidote is to use a gentle startup. So my parking example could be, instead of criticism of Alex, you know, you parked so far away. The gentle startup could be, hey, I remember last church we were just a little late. We actually parked down the street because you couldn't find a car park for us. I wonder, we should maybe build a bit of a plan about that next time. The gentle startup, you're trying to bring your point across, but you're being gentle about it. Defensiveness is taking responsibility. Yep, absolutely. Yep, that was me. Contempt is describing your own feelings and needs. So that's a complete game changer. Alex is hopeless at these things. He never understands. He never cares about this sort of stuff. That's the contempt space. Describe my own feelings and needs. Well, if I was Alex's partner, I might say, I feel, it's hard. You know, I can't say that he's hopeless at things. I might say, I feel that sometimes I'm not heard. I'm not understood. I feel that these things I struggle with. Now, that's something that Alex can work on because he can hear that. Alex can't work on, you're just hopeless. And in my examples, that's verbal, but often contempt is something that's not verbal. Contempt's something that you might sit with. And stonewalling is the psychological self-soothing. With parenting, you've got big feelings and big emotions. As adults, you also have big feelings and big emotions. If you're finding that you're not in the right place to have these discussions or to connect with someone, you need to do some self-soothing. One of the rules we talk about a little bit for couples work is that if you're unable to have an important conversation, be upfront, be truthful. But if you say no to that conversation, you are responsible for booking a time to then have the conversation again. I can't do this right now. I've just come from my talk. I'm really tired. I've got to go to bed. But I'll make some time tomorrow and we'll definitely talk about this properly. All right. Another example that I use in the form of therapy, you have these tools or interventions and they're deemed to have low psychological effect, simply meaning they're safe exercises to take home and to use. One of these that I'll use is called the Art of Compromise. It's really hard to see up on the screen there, but the thing that I think is really beautiful about this is this yield to win. Compromise with me like I am someone that you love. So not I win because I read this and I watched a YouTube video and I've just got the knowledge on this. Compromise with me like I am someone you love. And within this tool, you can think about what your core needs are and what areas that you have for flexibility. Last part of the model to think about is making life dreams come true and creating shared meaning. And in my work, I've never been able to separate these. I guess making life dreams come true is you going out and living an authentic life with you and your partner and you're feeling like you're actually doing the items. The shared meaning is what gives that purpose. So couples who take time to develop shared meaning and goals are likely to cultivate intimacy, which is a hallmark of matured and lasting love. It's something not simply arrived at chance, it's deliberately nurtured. However, if you like and respect who your partner is and how they conduct themselves in the world, and if you generally agree on the fundamentals of your life, your connection will be deeper and more meaningful. Doesn't mean you'll see eye to eye on everything, but your shared goals will align. Hey, we're all for this. We're all for the kids. We're all for growing this. We're all for mission. We're all for what your life is about. Shared meaning is really beautiful because this is your fully integrated sense of self, which is a lot of terms of basically, if I'm a plumber, and I just love doing that work. That's one part of my life. I'm also a father. I'm also a tragic cricket player. You know, And we're building out this integrated life, aren't we? So the shared meaning means that both of you are building out an integrated life. You're spending time together on a regular basis. You get to know your partner better. And you're sharing those feelings, those connections. All right. In terms of application, the themes that we're talking about, it takes an open and honest heart to do repair work in relationships. Also, good relationships deploy that preemptive repair. So we've talked about seven levels in the relationship house. And I want you just to consider those while we head back to Jack and Jill. So the terminology on there is exactly the same, okay? It's that Jill feels that Jack never spends enough time with her, spends too much time on his phone. Man, Jill feels that Jack is hopeless at home. Jack feels that Jill's always critical of the things he loves. He wishes she would really just get off his back. She can't see how hard he works. Now, from the content that we've talked about, each of those levels of the house, you could really start to try to approach. I use that terminology of repair without defining it, but can't you see now a lot of opportunities for repair for both Jack and Jill? Jill, it'd be really interesting to know if Jill's ever had these conversations with Jack. Is this a surprise? And often when I'm in my couples counseling room, sometimes it's a surprise that for one party, like they didn't know they were coming to counseling, like they just rocked up at our building. So sometimes it's that type of surprise. But sometimes this is new information. I will often ask, which doesn't take any real technical skill, to say, have you heard this before? And they will often say, no, I've not heard this before. This is new to me. So I'd be curious about their space around how they've managed conflict, how they have those conversations. Is this something we talk about at home? I'd also be curious to say, when Jill's in that space of feeling that Jack's hopeless at home, has she stepped away? You know, is she turning towards? Is Jill thinking, actually, I've got a lot of contempt for Jack. Jack's actually really disappointed me. And honestly, how do you undisappoint someone? Over on the other side, Jack feels like Jill's always critical of the things he loves. He wishes she'd get off his back. She can't see how hard he works. Again, we can go into this space to go, well, you know, Jack, have you ever shared that with Jill? Well, no, I don't tell her that sort of stuff. And you go, well, why would you expect her to change? Why would you expect her to be able to do something with that if you haven't told her that? You mentioned you can't see how hard you work. So if we go back to that shared meaning, maybe we go back to what brings purpose and that. Maybe Jack has a lot of pride in his IT work. He's really excited about it. I wonder how many emotional bids Jack has been trying to share with Jill. Look at this coding thing. Look at my integrated AI project. Look at my Power BI system. Like, isn't this incredible? I wonder if Jill's been doing some of that turn away because she's feeling that contempt. She's getting a bit stuck. But if we're talking about this like that, I also wonder how much Jack is inviting Jill. I wonder how much Jack is inviting Jill to be a friend. I wonder how much adoration, delight. I wonder the last time Jill felt adored by Jack. So there's a lot of possibilities there, and I want to highlight and encourage that framework can try to give a bit of a mode to doing something in the relationship. And people who care and to value relationships show up. And that's where this space is heading. I've got a couple of resources and links just as we start to close out the talk before I step into some questions and answers. There's an app on the App Store called the Gottman Card Decks. Again, it's free. You can download that. And it's got the love maps. It's got these rituals of connections, open-ended questions, and salsa. I'll let you figure out what salsa means, but generally the love maps is what I'm encouraging. Now, technically in that app, you can probably get to a certain section where you can buy something, but generally it's free and that's a pretty good resource. Also, the Relationship Institute Australasia. This is the certified institute around government marriage therapy, and it's got a lot of good couples, relationships and resources there as well. Now, I've got some printouts. I had many months to prepare to print out those printouts, and those printouts are not available tonight. What I will do is I'll make sure that they are on my person, and next time, if there's any of the information that you're interested in, I'm more than happy to share. At some stage, I might just have some printed out. I might leave them. I'm just available for people to grab. But again, over the four horsemen of the John Gottman's Four Horsemen, the love map questions, that art of compromising. The only thing that I'd encourage you to perhaps Google is that 6 hours to a better relationship. That's just taking a principle around how you might structure your week. We talked about preemptive repair. Well, this is the preemptive repair. You can do intentional time with your partner. And in that point, I'd also like to encourage two things. One is what's called a state of the union, which I know is a bit American, but the principle is how often do we as a couple have an intentional meeting, an intentional discussion about the relationship? Like, the purpose of this conversation is to talk about the relationship. It's not to talk about the fight that just happened. It's not to talk about what we're going to do tomorrow because someone's got to get to swimming. It's the relationship. The best way to have that conversation is not on your couch. It's not on your bed. It's to sit outside your laundry. It's to sit on the floor. It's to use an absurdity principle so that you're in a unique situation or a unique environment where you will focus more on the conversation. That's a really powerful tool. The second tool I'd really encourage you to consider is a letter. For those in the audience, there are little things that you can put on a letter that then go through a mail system. It's called a stamp. And I'd really encourage you to consider this. Write your partner a letter. Not a big one. Just some small, nice facts. Some small, nice statements. Pop it into an envelope. Put a stamp on it. Walk out to a mailbox and put it in. You can just put it in yours if you wish. And just let that little bomb happen. Let them just haphazardly grab that letter and open it up. What you're doing there is you're sharing love. You're being fun. You're being connecting. But you're actually taking an intentional step to support care and love for the relationship. Those are some things that I think we do more and more. And I just know it would be an absolute delight if any of the people that you value received a letter after tonight.
Thanks for joining us for this presentation from North Pine Baptist Church. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.